everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain. I'm Diana Chen, and I'm here with your host, John Abrams. Hey, John, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. It's a beautiful day in Chicago.
Awesome. So today I want to kind of continue our conversation from last week, as well as some previous conversations we've had about standards and EDI. And I just want to get deeper into the weeds about that today, standards and GS1, GDSN, all the things about standards. So you know what? I'll just let you kick it off with standards. Give people an overview of what we're talking about today.
So I have a love-hate relationship with standards. And just by way of background, I spent time on the ultimate standards body. It's called GS1. I think it stands for Global Standard One. And GS1, a fine institution, and it has member organizations, member countries all around the world. And what they do is they... And we've talked about this in prior episodes, so those of you that are hearing this again, apologies. But what they do is they set sort of that baseline for what does weight mean? And for those of us that grew up in the U.S. educational system, maybe at my age, we don't actually know what weight means, because it could mean kilograms and it could mean pounds. We don't actually know, because as we were going through grade school, we were debating moving to the metric system, and we really didn't. And so we really didn't, at my generation, we didn't learn anything. We learned a little bit that maybe quarts make up a gallon, but I couldn't tell you how many. But also a certain number of liters make up, I don't know, because literally from grade to grade, when I was in grade school, we would learn a little bit about the metric system and a little bit about the English system of weights and measures. And net, net, by the time I was in eighth grade, I was more confused about what weight meant. But leave that aside, my own personal irritation about the variability in our educational system. There is an organization, and it's made up of global members who agree on what weight means, whether you call it a pound or a kilogram. Here's what that actually means. And it serves dimensions. It serves all sorts of things. There's literally thousands of attributes related to products that GS1 governs. And they have relationships with other standards bodies. So if you've heard of things like ISO, all of the parameters that make up an ISO certification have a relationship back to GS1. And so there is this, you know, overarching set of organizations that define what things mean. And standards are the net result of that. When I say I have a love-hate relationship with it, leave my academic issues aside for a minute. The love-hate is that most standards are defined by the early days of what we could do with computers. And so you had fields in computers and in databases that were very rigid, and they would have to be defined at the coding stage as this is going to be a numeric field, and it's going to be this many digits, and that's it. And so you kind of pour concrete around that attribute, that field in the database, and you can never change it. And in fact, when we, I'm old enough to have suffered through the date change between 1999 and the year 2000, where we all sort of freaked out because our databases had all been hard-coded around a finite set of digits available to define a date, specifically the year. And so most of the years had been just coded in two digits, 89, 99, 99. And nobody knew what would happen when you clicked over to 00 and you couldn't tell the computer that it was 2000 to represent the year 2000, as opposed to 1900, which everybody assumed. So my relationship with standards is largely based on standards were artificially constrained because of the constraints of our systems in the early days. And the reality is that standards need to be very flexible and very robust and meet the needs of consumers as consumer needs evolve. And standards, just based on how they are agreed to on a global basis, they're really hard to do. And it's very academic, and it is very detailed, and it takes a long time. And so standards, my love of standards is it's great to have a concrete foundation for what something means. My hate of standards is that oftentimes they are too rigid and flexible to meet the needs that consumers or others in the supply chain have. And so that is my love-hate relationship with standards.
Totally makes sense. Can you talk a little bit more about the formal standards that you mentioned, like the GS1, the GDSN, EDI? Can you kind of differentiate each of those and then also compare those to some of the more informal standards that exist in the industry?
Yeah, so informal standards, let me start there. Informal standards are when a company, so let's, who should I pick on? Let's say that I'm Home Depot and I want to begin to report about my products a specific attribute, like contains mercury. And maybe I want to do that because my board of directors says this is very important and we need to take a stand on how much mercury is in our products. That's not to say that mercury is in their products or there's anything wrong with it. It's a fictitious example. But let's say they want to report that and they look across their database of supplier information and they find that they don't really have a way to indicate or have their suppliers indicate mercury level. So what they'll do is informally set a mercury standard. And maybe it's as simple as contains mercury or doesn't contain mercury, yes or no. Suppliers, please give us that information. By the way, if we're using a traditional service to get us that information, such as the GDSN, the Global Data Synchronization Network, if we're using that network to provide that information, well, there may not be a mercury yes-no option in that system. And so what informally Home Depot will do, again, this is a fictitious example, is they'll pick a random underutilized field. So maybe it'll be primary color. And instead of filling out primary color with whatever primary color should mean, they'll agree with their suppliers. That's actually going to be the field where we indicate mercury content, yes or no. And so what you've done is you've taken a system that provides standard information in a standard way, and you've bastardized it to serve your own very legitimate need to provide information. But you've now populated the data pool, the GDSN, with information that others can access. And they look at primary color and they say, well, why does that say yes or no? It shouldn't be a standard color. So that's that's kind of the informal side, the non-standard way of creating standards. And surprisingly, it happens frequently. And my view is that it happens frequently because as we've gotten to a level where consumers get more information more rapidly, they've continued to increase their demand. So they want to know more things about, was that banana organically grown? If so, what organic materials were used? And those are questions that growers didn't anticipate having to answer all the way to a consumer, nor do retailers often anticipate the questions that the consumers are posing. So standards tend to lag what consumer demand is. And the standards, just to get to your question, you know, traditional standards, when you talk about EDI as a standard, EDI is really a point-to-point information transmission vehicle. And what they did when they created it, and in fact, some of the early, or some of the companies Cardinal Health bought were leaders in developing EDI, quote, standards. And most of the standards are based on very specific order information. So something is on the way to your distribution center, they would create what they'd call header information, and supply chain people will know like an 856, and they will actually refer to things like an 856 because everybody in the warehouse understands what an 856 versus an 850 whatever means. And I don't even know anymore. I used to know more about this, but that header information was so that computers, not having a whole lot of capability back in the day, the computer could take that 850 whatever code and know, oh, that is a number of products on hand request or whatever that 850 header contain. So 850 whatevers became standard protocols or standard definitions of very specific things within the supply chain. They're very inflexible and they don't propagate well beyond very specific EDI engagements. And that's problematic because EDI was built when the world had to be more point to point. So communicate from point A to point B and that's it. In a network or mesh environment, EDI doesn't do as well. I shouldn't say it doesn't do as well. It's not formatted for that environment. And so you can be much more flexible. You can be much more expansive about what gets transmitted, yet we're still locked into this very standard protocol set with EDI. Similar in the world of the GDSN, where you have, as I was talking about, very specific field attributes, and they tend to be slow to modernize or really to anticipate and exceed what a consumer is asking for. So very roughly, those are the constraints in the world of EDI and the world of GS1 and the GDSN.
Gotcha. Yeah, so I know standards in general are meant to protect the consumer. And I would think that, you know, in protecting the consumer, you're able to relay more information to the consumers. But from a real life perspective, how does it play out in real life for the consumer? The consumer wants all the information that they can get about a product. Do standards enable the consumer to receive more information, or does it actually limit them?
I think standards really limit what is available. And so if you think about the supply chain, I actually have an example that I send to people. It's the life of a digital banana, because there's the product side of the banana. It's actually what you physically can touch and open and eat. So there's the physical side of a banana, but there's also the digital life of a banana. So there's a whole bunch of information that the farmer has about the banana, what fertilizers he used, what day it was picked, size, weight, all of those sorts of things. All of that information sort of gets appended to or eliminated as the digital banana traverses the supply chain from the place where it was grown until the place it was eaten. And so there's varying levels of information all through the digital life of a banana, but very little of that gets communicated all the way down to the consumer, in part because by the time the banana gets to the store, the digital life is really confusing. And so the store may want a certain set of attributes that they may or may not communicate to the consumer, but you have a very narrow set of attributes. It's very hard to even tell that banana came from a particular grower or even country. And the problems of that lack of transparency, if you will, and we've talked about transparency in the past, the problems with that are that when you see on the news that, holy cow, the banana forest in some particular country has been decimated by a a bug that produces a pathogen that humans shouldn't eat, there is no way to tell that your banana came from that particular source. And so you can't even equate the physical good that you have in your possession with something that's actually happening in the real world. That problem can be solved. We can fix it. And I think primarily we need to fix it for recalls so that we can have consumers better connected to the supply chain, to the grower, to various parts, pieces of information that they need in order to make decisions. So I think your question is really perfect for uncovering what it is we need to do to make more information stay throughout the life of that digital banana and be available and accessible all the way down to the consumer. And we're not there yet today.
Gotcha. Well, hopefully one day in the near future. And then another thing I was thinking about is I've heard you say before product hierarchy, and I know you've mentioned that before, but I wanted to ask about that and how that kind of falls into the whole standards thing as well.
So hierarchy is a way to classify things. And so if you think about all materials on the globe, whether it's a plant, a banana a product, or an automobile, if you start with maybe origin of the product being global, we can all agree that except for meteorites, almost all products, their origin would be of this planet. Very, very little comes back from the moon or through meteors. So we can pretty much say that whether it's going to be a banana or an automobile, the origin is Earth. And then you begin to go down to the next level. Is it organic, meaning is it a tree? Or is it non-organic, meaning it's an automobile? And so you create these classifications that allow products to be grouped. And the reason that hierarchies are really important in this day and age is that when you do a search for something at, say, Amazon, you want to very quickly be able to convert whatever the person typed in that they were searching for, banana, into fit that into a search pattern that Amazon can very quickly route you to. It's not a picture of a banana. It's actually a physical banana that one can eat. And so classifying things in the right way allows that distinction to be made between it's a banana that's edible and it's a banana that's made of glass, or it's an art piece of a banana. So hierarchies, and I am not the best person to get into the detail of UNSPEC or the various hierarchies that are out there, but leave it as hierarchies to me are just another manifestation of computers in the early days needing to have very specific ways to classify something, because you can't or you couldn't apply things like machine learning or AI into the system to allow the system itself to distinguish between a glass art banana and an edible banana. You can do more of those things now, but hierarchies persist, and they should persist for some time, but they're very complex. And we should probably invite, there is actually a guy on the Venzi team who has spent most of his career in product hierarchy, and it'd be kind of fun to do a deep dive, because we would all learn a lot more having a clear understanding of how hierarchies have evolved and their limits today.
Yeah, let's definitely get him on sometime and dive into that further. But for today, thank you so much again, John, for another fascinating conversation, as always, about supply chain. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Hope you learned something about standards today. And we will be back again next time with another episode of Rethinking Supply Chain.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Supply Chain podcast. It's brought to you by Venzi, intelligent product content distribution for enterprise commerce. Learn more and say hello to us at venzi.com. That's VENZEE.com.